Wolf snaked one hand between us and rubbed my slit through the fabric of my panties. I was so wet, an apology for reacting this way to his body was dancing on the tip of my tongue. He continued kissing me, chuckling into my mouth every time I squirmed and moaned. "You're so responsive," he muttered in what I thought could be actual awe between kisses that became dirtier, longer, and wetter, rubbing me faster down there. Was being responsive a good or a bad thing? As a good girl, that was another thing to worry about. I found myself opening my legs wider for him, inviting him to do more of this magic. Some girls touched themselves, but I preferred not to. Not that I thought it wasn't okay, I just knew that I couldn't risk losing my virginity accidentally. It was priceless. But he was my husband-to-be, and it seemed to please him. And me. I knew that the first time was supposed to hurt, but a part of me was happy it was going to be in the experienced arms of Wolf. Everything tingled inside me, and I felt like I was about to burst. On the tip of something monumental. His mouth moved against mine more angrily, but I knew it wasn't the same anger as the day he threw me out of his room. "So what?" he growled, pushing his thumb halfway into my opening through my panties. I arched my back and closed my eyes, my body bursting with 1,000 different sensations. My fingers fluttered against his groin through his pants, huge and hard and even warmer than the rest of him. A terrible thought crossed my mind. I wanted him in my mouth. What was I thinking? Why would I want it there? This was definitely not something I was going to share with Clara or Mama, not even Ms. Sterling. "Jesus, Francesca, the mouth. You pervert." He grabbed me by the back of my thighs and wrapped my legs around his waist, kissing me as he made his way to the stairs, my arms still draped around his neck. I realized he was taking me to a bedroom, his or mine, and that I couldn't go there. I had to tell him I was a virgin, that in my world we had rules, and one of mine was no sex until marriage. But that was entirely too awkward in this particular situation. I needed to choose the time and the place to come clean. "Put me down," I slurred between drunken kisses.
"I don't give oral on principle, but you're wet enough to fit a fucking shovel in."
"What?" Fright gripped my throat, tightening its claws on my neck from the inside. He was half ready to maul me right there on the floor. We were already upstairs when I began to push him off me, untangling my legs from his waist. He let go of me immediately, watching as I stumbled out of his embrace, my back hitting the wall.
"Nemesis?"
He frowned, tilting his chin down. He looked more confused than angry. For all his shortcomings, Wolf had never forced me to do anything physical with him. "I said I'm not ready."
"You also said it as though I personally escorted you to Hell's Gates. What's the matter?"
I was embarrassed by my behavior, embarrassed by both my lie of being experienced and my virginity. Last but not least, I was ashamed of wanting it so badly. Was that all it took for me to forget Angelo? The hard length of Wolf against my softness?
"Are you a virgin?"
His mouth nearly blossomed into a smile. So rare was laughter on my fiancé's face, I was beginning to think he was incapable of true joy. "Of course I'm not a virgin." I slapped my thigh, turning away toward my room. He grabbed my arm and pulled me back to his embrace. I melted against his body like butter on a fry pan. "I just need a little time. You're still more experienced than I am."
"It's not a competition."
"I've seen the papers." I narrowed my eyes accusingly. "You're a Casanova." Casanova. His chest danced against mine as he rumbled with a chuckle at my choice of words.
Shall I escort you to the nearest portal to take you back to the 16th century?
He faked a theatrical English accent. I knew I sounded like a prude. Worse, I knew I was raised to be one, and shaking off the chains of my dated scruples would be difficult. But I wasn't 19. Not really. I had the manners of a 50-year-old and the life experience of a goddamn toddler. Forget it. He sucked his teeth in, smirking.
Fine, no fucking. We can fool around, senior year style. A blast from the past.
That sounded equally as dangerous as going all the way. The mere idea of being with him in the same room with the door closed felt scandalous somehow.
In your room?
He hitched one shoulder up.
Your call. One of us will have to leave after it's over. I don't share a bed with women.
And men? I slid back into my element, glad we were back in friendly territory.
Watch your mouth, Miss Rossi. Unless you want to find it wrapped around my something long and hard that'll make your jaw snap.
I knew he was kidding this time, and even had to cover a grin, ducking my head down. Is sleeping alone a principle, too?
Yes.
So he did not share a bed with his partners, did not perform oral sex, and was not interested in forming a relationship with a woman. I didn't know much about the world of dating, but I was pretty certain my future husband wasn't a great catch.
I feel like there's a Francesca question coming my way.
He scanned me, and I realized I'd been munching on my lower lip contemplatively. Why do you not give oral? I asked, pinking again. It didn't help that we were having the conversation in the middle of the foyer where Ms. Sterling could hear us through the thin door of her room. Wolf, of course, seemed anything but embarrassed, placing his shoulder on the wall and watching me through lazy eyes.
I actually quite enjoy the taste of pussy. It's the bowing down part I have severe dislike to.
You think it's degrading?
I will never kneel for anyone. Don't take it personally.
Surely there are plenty of positions that would not require that of you. What was I saying? He smirked.
In all of them, the person giving the pleasure looks like the peasant.
And how come you never share a bed with anyone?
People leave. Getting used to them is pointless.
A husband and a wife are not supposed to leave each other.
Yet you would be more than willing to turn your back on this, would you not, my dear fiancé?
I said nothing. He pushed off the wall and took a step toward me, tilting my chin up with his thumb. Wolf was wrong. Or at least not completely right. I was no longer hell-bent on running away from him. Not since I realized my parents weren't going to fight for me. Angelo said we'd be together this lifetime, but I hadn't heard from him since. With every day that passed, breathing without feeling as if a knife had been shoved into my lungs became easier. But I didn't confess that to Wolf. I didn't utter aloud what my body spoke to him in my parents' piano room. I stepped out of his embrace, telling him everything there was to say. I'm not ready yet. Good night, villain. I ambled to my bedroom. The jagged edge of his voice ran like fingers over my back behind me, but he relented, accepted my reluctance to be with him like that.
Sleep tight, Nemesis.
Chapter 10. Wolf. I watched from the back of my Cadillac as the private investigator I'd hired slammed his car door shut and walked over to knock on the Rossi's door. Francesca's mother answered, and he handed her the brown manila file and turned around without a word, just as I had instructed him to. Arthur Rossi tried to destroy the evidence against him. I was going to destroy him. I'd filled Chicago's streets with more cops and moles. For the past 3 decades, he'd been ruling those streets with an iron fist. And now, in only a few short weeks, I'd managed to eliminate a lot of his power. The investigator I'd hired reported back that Arthur had been drinking more, sleeping less, and raised his hand to 2 of his most trustworthy soldiers. For the first time in 3 decades, he was spotted leaving his own strip clubs, smelling not only like cigars and alcohol, but also other women's pussies. 2 of the women, out-of-towners, were stupid enough to allow the investigator to take pictures of them with Arthur. I'd created more of a mess for him, and it seemed as though his Keaton problem wasn't going to go away. I watched Francesca's mother's face crumpling as she slid the pictures out of the envelope. I simultaneously clutched a letter in my own hand. It was addressed to me from her husband, containing anthrax, I was sure, if it weren't too incriminating against him. Francesca's mother started after the investigator's white Hyundai, but he already took off before she could question him further about the things he showed her. I tore open the letter and skimmed over it. It was an invitation to throw his daughter and me an engagement party. It was suspicious, but a part of me gave him the benefit of the doubt. I figured he wanted to put on a show and make people think our marriage had his blessing in order to try and assert more power over the situation. Furthermore, staging the fire at Murphy's didn't serve him well. My briefcase, which didn't contain the evidence against him, as he'd been tipped, was gone, but now he reopened a front with the Irish, who saw the fire as a direct attack on them. Saying Francesca and her parents ended their last encounter on a bad note with me would be the understatement of the goddamn century, and this could give them a chance to patch things up. Not that I had any plans to play the Brady Bunch with a mobster, but the last thing I wanted was a scandal-filled wedding with a tearful bride. And the future Mrs. Keaton, much to my disdain, excelled at turning on that Buckingham fountain and crying her eyes out every time things didn't work according to her Instagram-perfect ideas. Francesca was at church again. She'd been spending a lot of time at church because, on top of being a prude and a crier, she was also, you guessed it, a closeted nun. On the bright side, it couldn't hurt my chances of gaining more supporters. Everyone loved a good Christian family. They didn't have to know the groom's bride was more interested in banging the family's friend. Today, Francesca had previewed the decorations for our upcoming nuptials. Since we'd agreed there was no need for a rehearsal dinner, we decided on a speedy event in the House of God, followed by a modest party at her parents'. Arthur also asked in the letter if we'd do the Rossi couple the honor of staying the night at their house and attend a celebratory breakfast afterward. It was a good opportunity to finally sit him down and lay it all out for him, play by play. How I was going to take away everything he'd ever worked for, then break the news that none of the money, property, and reputation he'd gained over the years mattered, and make him realize that none of it would help him one bit in this dire situation. Francesca and I weren't going to give him any grandchildren. It wouldn't hurt that my bride would get the chance to spend time with her mother, a reward for her sensible behavior. "Back to the house," I told Smithy. "You have the pep rally at 6 o'clock," one of my executive protection agents, fancy name for a bodyguard, just as well as there was zero chance of my remembering his real name, pointed out from the passenger's seat. Usually it was my PA's job to remind me about social obligations. However, he was down with his 5th stomach bug for the summer and texted Smithy and my bodyguards relentlessly to keep me on schedule. I waved my hand. "Make it quick." As we zipped by the Sears Tower, deep dish pizza parlors with cheap neon signs and buskers performing their own version of Billboard's current hits, I thought about my fiancé. Francesca had been growing on me like fingernails, slowly, determinedly, and completely without my attention or encouragement. She waited for me every evening in her vegetable garden, an oddly attractive scent of mud, cigarettes, clean soap clinging on her body, and not wearing much more than a barely there long camisole that cleaved to her body with sweat and mist. She was always surprised and delighted when I lowered her on the wet soil, still fully clad in my suit, pressed my knee between her legs, and devoured her sweet mouth until our lips were cracked and our mouths were dry. She always gasped when I rubbed her hand over my cock through my dress pants, and she even chanced a squeeze in the pavilion, somewhere exposed enough for her to feel safe, but hidden enough for us not to have an audience. Her eyes flared in awe and joy when I flicked her clit through her panties not so accidentally. Every time I gave her a chance to pull away, she stapled her body to mine, making us one entity. I kept my word and didn't initiate sex with her. Figured the day we'd sleep together was drawing close with our pending nuptials. She was receptive, syrupy, and fascinated. Long gone were the days of the jaded, experienced Kristens. Francesca, despite the fact she'd slept with men before, was raw. I was going to teach her all the dirty tricks the Bandini kid couldn't, and have fun doing so. I'd visited her room a few times when I knew she wasn't there, always watching out for two things. The third note, she hadn't opened the box yet. I knew because the tiny golden key was positioned precisely in the same place, not moving an inch between the cracks of her expensive, ancient wooden floors. The floor was due to be replaced before her arrival, but now that I knew where she kept her secrets, I decided to keep the cracks intact. The other was to check her phone for traces of Angelo. There were none. His messages were left unanswered, though she did not delete him from her contacts. "We're here," Smithy said as he parked by Lincoln Brooks High School. The place had produced more gang members than literate citizens, and it was my job to smile, wave, and pretend that things would be okay for the students. They were going to be, once I'd cleaned their streets of Francesca's father's employees. Protocol demanded one executive protection agent should open my door while the other positioned himself behind me at all times, so that was what we did. I walked across the yellow, uneven lawn toward the low, gray, depressingly square building, passing metal barricades with excited students and their parents who came to see an alumni rapper who was going to perform there later that evening. The kid had more ink on his face than a Harry Potter book and some questionable scars. I waltzed toward the principal of the school, a shapely woman with a cheap suit and an 80s haircut. She ran toward me, her heels stubbing the dry ground beneath us.
"Senator Keaton, we're beyond excited," she started, just as gunfire cracked through the air.
One of my bodyguards jumped over my body instinctively, throwing me to the floor. My stomach plastered to the ground. I twisted my head to the side, watching the barricaded crowd. People started running in every direction, parents tugging their children, babies crying, and teachers yelling hysterically at the students to calm down. The principal slid down to the grass and began to scream in my face, covering her head with her hands. "Thanks for the help, lady." Another bullet sliced through the air, then another, each of them getting closer to me. "Get off me," I growled to the EPA on top of me. "But protocol says..." "Protocol can go fuck itself in the ass," I snapped, the remainder of my previous less-than-delightful life creeping into my language. "Call 911 and let me deal with this." He disconnected his heavy body from mine reluctantly, and I sprang up to my feet and started running for the kid with the gun. I doubted he had more bullets in that thing. Even if he had, he proved to be a shit aim. He couldn't put a bullet in me if I literally hugged him. I raced right toward him, knowing that I wasn't brave as much as I was vindictive and stupid, but not giving much damn. "You took it too far, Arthur," I thought. "Further than I gave you credit for." He played nice and sent me an invitation to an engagement party and suggested we stay at his place. He was building an alibi. I bet he was sitting somewhere in public right now, maybe even pouring bowls of soup in a fucking charity basement. By the time I put a good dent on the distance between me and my pimply assassin, the crowd had evaporated and he was exposed. He turned around and started running. I was faster. I caught the hem of his white tee from behind, yanking him back to me. "Who sent you? I don't know what you're talking about," he shouted, kicking the air as I dragged him back, but not before prying the gun from his hand and kicking it to the side. Not 10 seconds later, 10 police vehicles were surrounding us from every direction, and armed and shielded special unit officers came out, officially arresting him. I cursed under my breath. I needed a few more minutes with him. I knew, without a shadow of the doubt, that he wasn't going to throw Arthur under the bus. But my EPAs and driver already escorted me to the other side of the building with 2 detectives and 4 officers tailing behind us. "What you did today is a very admirable thing, Senator Keaton. School shootings are a real issue these days, and I..." the principal started. "God, woman, just shut up." "Any injuries?" I cut her words. "Not so far," one of the officers said as we made our way to my vehicle. "But you will be the talk of the town for the next couple of days. That was heroic." "Thank you." I hated compliments. They made you lax and unguarded. "Zion says you'll need to make some media appearances today." My EPA, the one who shielded me from the bullets, stared at his phone. "Fine." I took out my phone and texted Arthur's number in an instant. The first text message I had ever sent my future father-in-law. "Thank you for the invitation. My fiancé and I gladly accept." Tucking the phone back into the breast pocket of my jacket, I smirked. Arthur Rossi tried to kill me. He was about to find out that he was a pussy and I was a cat. With 9 lives. 2 down. 7 to go. The next few days, we were all about talking to the media, raising awareness about school shootings, and milking every second of the incident. Nobody suspected it was an attempt to assassinate me. The kid, an Italian school alumni and a Marine on vacation who got cold feet and forgot how to aim, was in custody now and insisted that it was video games that made him do it. The day of the engagement party, Nem and I were to meet downstairs at 7 o'clock. I took a shower and got dressed at the office, but made it home in a timely manner. Leaving Francesca as prey for Arthur was no longer an option. Arthur was beginning to feel a lot like a loose cannon, and I didn't want it anywhere near the smoothly operating machine called my life. When I arrived on time, Francesca was waiting for me in a tight white gown that made my cock jump in a standing ovation. God, she was beautiful. And God, I was going to fuck her tonight, even if I had to give her the foreplay she loved so much until my tongue fell off. The woman was delicious and ripe, and mine. And mine, and mine. If I repeated these words in my head enough times, I could make it true. I walked over to my bride-to-be, yanked her by the waist, and kissed her openly in front of Sterling, who was fretting with the hem of Francesca's gown. The old woman nearly swooned when our lips touched. She'd known me my entire life and had never seen me kiss a woman, in public or otherwise. Sterling twirled to the kitchen with a spring in her step, giving us privacy. Francesca and I cocked our eyebrows in unison. Our bodies were mimicking one another, too.
How are you feeling?
She'd been asking me this a lot since the rally incident. I wished she wouldn't. It served as a constant reminder that she was the spawn of the person responsible for it. Yet she had no idea of her father's indiscretions. Stop asking. The answer will always be the same. I'm fine.
To be honest, it's not me who is worried at this point. Did you know Miss Sterling eavesdrops on everything we do and say?
Nem scrunched her buttony nose. I flicked her chin playfully. I found out about Sterling's fascination with other people's business the hard way. After masturbating in the room next door to Sterling at 13 and a half, I found a box of Kleenex on my nightstand and a practice safe sex brochure the next day. To Sterling's credit, I would say I read the motherfucker twice and had never in my 30 years of miserable existence on this planet had sex without a condom.
I wonder how she'd react when we do more than kissing.
My bride-to-be reddened, looking down between us.
Might want to reconsider that, darling. I have an erection the size of a salami, and any audience be damned.
I suggest we find out tonight.
How curious of you. You'd make a wonderful investigator.
She bit on a smile. The only mystery I intend to unfold is how deep I can bury myself inside you.
I can't believe you're a senator,
she mumbled to herself.
Me neither.
On that high note, we left, arm in arm. The evening took a nosedive from the moment we set foot in Francesca's parents' manor. Not unexpected, but unsatisfactory all the same. For one thing, as soon as we reached the Rossi estate, I'd noticed news vans swarming the neighborhood, barricading the main street and causing a commotion of bystanders. Arthur had invited journalists and local news channels, and they, of course, came running to his doorstep. A senator marrying the daughter of a mobster. It had more juice than a big gulp. Determined not to allow Arthur to fuck up my life more than he already had, I opened the door for Francesca and escorted her into her former house, ignoring the catcalls from the reporters and the flash of the cameras from the photographers by their side. Once we got inside, Francesca clung to me like I was her lifeline, and I realized with dread instead of glee that, in a way, I was. Nemesis no longer saw this house as her home. I was her home now, and I was haunted beyond belief, ready to exercise my need for her. Her parents approached us, keeping a safe distance from one another. Her mother looked like she hadn't slept in approximately 2 months, wearing too much makeup to hide the effects of her mental state, and Arthur looked an inch or two shorter. Since I had zero illusions about Sophia Rossi leaving her cheating husband, I had to deduce that I'd done just what I came here to. Rocked his boat a little more and shattered another facet of his life. We did the customary kisses and hug charade, salute glasses of Bellini, then they introduced us to their circle of friends. I noticed three things immediately and simultaneously. One, Arthur Rossi had invited a very leggy, very blonde, very demoted, and therefore very vindictive reporter who was intimately acquainted with my cock, Kristen Rees. Two, he also invited some of the most fishy and ill-reputable people in the country, including ex-cons, gang leaders, and the likes of which I normally stayed far away from. He hoped this would contaminate my reputation, which I had no doubt it would, since Kristen was there to take notes. Three, without even really needing to look, I instantly found Angelo standing there, nursing a glass of wine, making lazy conversation with other guests. This wasn't an attempt to appease me and show that the Rossies were on board with our upcoming nuptials. This was a setup.
We have quite the audience tonight. Think you can handle our flavor of guests?
Arthur swirled his drink, shooting me a menacing smile. We hadn't spoken since I RSVP'd his invitation, after which I hadn't filled in the authorities about what really happened. More leverage for me, one more secret I could use against him. Of course, that meant this place was swarming with security, thanks to my future father-in-law. Good thing we only had a few more weeks of pretending. Francesca and I would soon be married, and then my plan would be executed. I was going to throw him in jail and make sure he rotted there while I fucked his daughter and left his wife to accept the Keaton couple's very charitable hospitality. I was not generous enough to pay for the grand mansion in Little Italy, though. Francesca's mother was welcome to move to one of the multiple properties I owned across Chicago. The ultimatum was going to be clear. If the mother and daughter wanted my protection and my money and my mercy, they were to turn their back on Arthur, and I'd found the poetic justice almost perfect. After all, there was only one thing worse than losing a close, loved relative to an unexpected death. Losing their love and affection while they were still alive.
I can handle anything you throw at me, Arthur, including, but not limited to, your spawn, who is, in fact, handled quite nicely behind closed doors.
I yawned, ignoring the look of surprise and hurt Francesca flashed me. It was not in my nature to kiss and tell, but in that case, there really was nothing to tell. We did nothing but heavy petting. It wasn't my intention to humiliate Nemesis, but it was necessary in order to humiliate her father. And choosing between her anguish and his pride, I'd run over my future wife to get a kick out of Arthur any day. Rossi's nostrils flared, his eyes zooming in on me like two barrels of a gun. He shook it off quickly, turning his head to his daughter.
Angelo Bandini and his family are here. Shame it didn't work out with him and Emily after all.
Arthur tisked, studying Francesca's expression through the rim of his glass, which was tilted up again. No surprises there. Nemesis was still staring at me, bewildered. It took everything for her to drag her eyes to her father and address him. If I were half decent, I'd apologize. As it happened, I was not only a bastard, but also keen on her forming this opinion of me prior to us having sex. It would help me set boundaries for what we were and weren't.
Oh?
She smiled politely, as though they were complete strangers. Either my future wife was a very good actress, or she really was over her silly fixation with the Italian stud.
I'm sorry to hear.
She moved her gaze back to me, demanding an explanation.
Your father is a cunt. Good enough for you?
Don't say that to him, you fool. Say that to him.
Arthur shoved Francesca in the other direction toward Bandini. I was about to escort my betrothed to her fuck buddy when Arthur placed a firm hand on my shoulder. His smile was full of teeth and menace, and he reeked of alcohol. His eyes were red and small, but laser-focused on me.
Senator Keaton, I would love to introduce you to my friend Charles Burton.
As in the same congressman who had just resigned to avoid an ethics investigation after groping his employees. Might as well stick my cock in the nearest squirrel's ass. It would make less of an embarrassing headline and wouldn't put my morals in question.
I'm sure you would, but I have something to attend to.
I gritted out, taking a sidestep, my shoulder brushing his.
Nonsense!
He clasped my arm, pulling me back. The only reason I relented was because I didn't want to cause a scene in front of Kristen and give her something else to write about tomorrow morning.
Didn't you donate to his campaign?
I did. Before he tried to put his dick in everything in his office, pencil sharpener included. Of course, Burton was already next to me, hugging and congratulating me as my bride drifted like a magnet to Angelo, who was already racing toward her, his hurried, barely contained steps making my eyelid twitch. They met halfway, then stopped abruptly, their arms dangled beside their bodies. Their awkwardness told me that nothing had changed. They still didn't know how to act un-in love. My eyes followed them religiously as Burton began to talk my ear off, shooting excuses about why he had to step down. The notion that I cared nearly disturbed me. At this point, he could murder an entire strip club and I would still be more interested in the way my bride-to-be, my fucking bride-to-be, thank you very much, flushed at something Angelo had told her, lowering her gaze to the floor and tucking a stray strand of hair behind her ear. They knew I was looking, so they kept a respectable distance, but everything in their body language screamed intimacy. The place was full of people, and I had to remind myself that this was not Bishop's son's wedding. They couldn't sneak into the bathroom and fuck. On the other hand, I did just throw her under the bus to get a rise out of her father, so my defiant fiancé had every motivation to poke me back with the one thing she knew drove me mad. Her ex-whatever. I didn't know or care what they labeled each other. And then I told them that I will not, under any circumstances, take a lie detector test. Burton continued blabbing, clasping my shoulder. The audacity to even ask, "Hey, Charles?" I cut him off. "Yeah?" "I don't give a single flying fuck why you stepped down or about the rest of your non-existent career. Have a nice life, or don't. I regretfully do not care either way." With that, I shook his touch off, plucking a glass of champagne from a silver tray that floated around the busy room by one of the penguin-looking waiters as I dashed toward my bride-to-be. I was a few feet away from them when a shoulder sliced through the crowd, blocking my way. My eyes met the top of a gray head, hair sleeked back and carefully trimmed. Bishop. He shook his head, his shit-eating grin wider than his face. Finally, and after weeks of my dangling his future over his head since I'd found out he and White were bribed by Arthur, he was in a position to shit over my plans. 19, huh? She must be tight as our goddamn budget, he chuckled, swirling his whiskey in his tumbler. How would you know anything about tightness? Everything about you is loose, your morals included. I smirked back. I was, for all intents and purposes, a perfect gentleman and a polite conversationalist when in social circles, but Bishop and White were no longer people I needed to impress. I'd known that since before the masquerade, which was why I had allowed myself to piss off Francesca there in the first place. I don't remember you leaving a lasting impression on the Rossi girl the first time you met. Suffice to say, I'm not the only one with questionable ethics in this room, Preston replied, throwing smiles and waves to everyone around us. Whatever you're implying, you can go ahead and say it, I hissed. You're already blackmailing Arthur for his daughter, that much is clear. The girl is not yours. He tipped his chin toward Angelo and Francesca. He said something that made her cup her mouth and duck her head down. Smitten. What I'm trying to figure out is, does that mean that White and I are in the clear? Thank fuck for arrogant idiots like Bishop who had their lives handed to them on a silver platter. He actually thought my endgame was young pussy as opposed to taking down the biggest mobster in Chicago since Al Capone. That, of course, worked to my advantage. If Bishop and White were under the impression that I'd already got what I was looking for, they'd keep their guards down. And so, even though separating Francesca and Angelo was of the essence, settling this matter took priority now. I have what I need, I smiled easily. Bishop nodded, smiling and tapping my shoulder.
He leaned toward me and whispered, "How is she in the sack? A lamb or a lioness?" "She is spectacular, Keaton." I was glad it was not possible to strangle a person through an expression alone, because if it were, Preston Bishop would be dead, and I would be escorted to the nearest police station. I neither knew nor cared why it bothered me so much that the governor spoke of my future wife as if she were a racehorse I'd purchased. I downed my champagne glass and tipped my chin up. "How's your wife in the sack?" I asked. He blinked. "Excuse me? Actually, I don't think I will, Preston. Miss Rossi's age does not give you the permission to talk about her like she's a piece of meat. But enjoy the rest of the party." I sauntered past him, inwardly cursing Arthur for being an asshole, Angelo for existing, and myself for ever wanting to lay a hand on the beautiful siren dressed as Nemesis. The decision to marry her was supposed to chain Arthur further to my plan and clean up my reputation. Instead, it made everything 1,000 times more difficult and complex. When I slanted my gaze sideways to look for Nem in the throng of partygoers, I found Kristen instead, cradling her drink and raising it in my direction with a cunning smile. It was an invitation I declined by ignoring the gesture, roaming the room with my eyes for long minutes, only to find that Francesca and Angelo were not in the room anymore. I climbed up to the second floor, checking her room and every single other bedroom in the house, then the bathrooms, before I remembered that my fiancé was fond of gardens. I figured if Angelo and Francesca were going to fuck, they'd go somewhere private. But I forgot one little thing. Nemesis claimed to have loved Angelo. A few stolen kisses and rushed promises under the pink sunset were just as rewarding to them as a rendezvous between the sheets. I descended the garden stairs to find them sitting on a stone fountain, their knees angled toward one another. He caressed her cheek, and she let him. He tucked a curl behind her ear, and she let him. He plastered his forehead against hers, and she let him do that too. Their breaths were heavy, their chests falling and rising in harmony. And I stood there, watching, simmering, fire coursing through me. I regretted humiliating her in front of her father, for I learned, for the first time, that my actions toward her had consequences. I compromised her honor, so she was compromising mine. The only difference was I did it to spite someone else. She truly loved another. Bandini leaned toward her face, brushing his thumb along her lips. Her eyes drifted to her thighs again, drunk on a moment they both knew they couldn't prolong. There was pain and sadness in his touch, confusion in her expression, and I knew, without a shadow of a doubt, that I stepped into something bigger than I'd anticipated. This wasn't puppy love. This was the real thing. She looked up and said something, taking his hands in hers and bringing them to her chest. She was begging for something. "What the hell can this boy give you that I can't?" But the answer was obvious. Love. He could give her real love, something she would never receive in the Keaton mansion. Not from me, and not from her vegetables. He nodded, getting up and walking toward the balcony's double doors. I was surprised and disturbed by the relief I felt before hardening again. She probably noticed me and told him to run off before I killed him with my bare hands. I took a step toward the garden, ready to reclaim her and make sure she did not leave my sight again the rest of the evening. But as soon as Angelo walked away, she looked left, then right, and approached a group of middle-aged women. Making polite, disinterested conversation, she kept her eyes stuck on the second floor of the house the entire time.
and after no longer than 5 minutes, she disappeared inside the house. I followed her steps again, convinced they were going to the same place, when a feminine hand clasped my forearm, making me turn around.
"Do you at least go down on her?"
Kristen smirked, her freshly applied red lipstick and precisely pinned blonde updo showing she'd freshened up before hunting me down. I shook her off, laser-focused on going upstairs and finding my fiancé, but she blocked my way to the staircase, which was already teeming with people as it was. I had no particular objection to shoving her out of my way, but considering the amount of security, media, and the fact that she herself was a journalist, it wasn't the best idea of the century. Yet again, I had to face the question that seemed to be eternal since Francesca had walked into my life. My career and reputation, or catching her little cheating ass red-handed? Good news, I still had logic on my side. Bad news, for now.
"I dug around."
Kristen snapped her fruity gum in my face, batting her lashes. "Did you find a bone, or someone to bone you, for that matter?" It irritated me that my internal thoughts bled outside my mouth. I usually prided myself in an admirable dose of self-control. But knowing my fiancé was probably fucking another guy upstairs made me want to rip the walls off with my own fingernails. Whereas I was quite content letting Francesca scratch her Angelo itch a few weeks ago, now was a completely different matter.
"Are you not interested to hear what I found out?"
"Not really." I elbowed her aside gently, starting up the stairs. She chased me, grabbing the hem of my blazer and tugging. "Not a chance, sweetheart." I was at the curve of the stairway when her words made me stop.
"I know why you did this to Rossi. He was responsible for that explosion, the one that killed your parents when you were at Harvard."
I turned around, observing her, really looking, not just skimming her features, for the first time. Kristen was not a bad journalist, and under any other circumstances, I would respect her. But since it was me she was trying to fuck over, I had no choice but to fuck her harder, all puns intended.
"Do you have a point to your hearsay? Rossi made you an orphan, so you took his daughter as retribution. An eye for an eye. I'd say it's a pretty good lead."
She tipped her champagne glass back, taking a sip. I smirked, assessing her coldly. "I took Francesca Rossi as a bride because I liked her. True, I have no kind words to say about her father, but it won't be him warming my bed at night."
"She doesn't even share your bed yet. How interesting."
Kristen slow clapped at my restraint at putting up with such behavior. Since she finally let go of my blazer, I turned around to complete my journey to the second floor just as Angelo slipped out of a guest room, squeezing past my shoulder in the narrow hallway. I took one sniff at him and knew that he had just had sex. His lips were swollen, and his hair was disheveled and damp with sweat. Kristen's eyes lit up at the look of him making his grand escape. Glee oozed from her big, fat smile. I grabbed his arm, turning him around to face me. This night was going down in the books as my worst night as a public figure and possibly as a human being. Angelo stared at me, heaving. Frantic, breathless, guilty. "Leave before I ruin your life," I spat out at Kristen. "And this time, you won't get a third warning." She laughed.
"Seems like you two have a lot to talk about."
My former mistress scurried away, her laughter carrying in my ears long seconds after she was gone. I plastered Angelo to the wall, grabbing him by the collar. I knew it looked bad. I knew I had to explain it tomorrow morning. I simply no longer cared. "Who was with you in that room?" I demanded. I'd strongly advise you stop acting like a thug unless you'd like to be treated like one. I strongly advise you to stay away from my future wife before I really do kill you. You've had sex, I countered. Thanks, Captain Obvious. I was there, he laughed, regaining some of his composure, which infuriated me even more. Who with? I pulled at his collar, almost to the point of choking. That sure wiped the smile off his face. I knew I had to calm down before people started noticing the little scene I'd created, but I couldn't, for the life of me, gather my wits. See, my first answer to you, none of your business, Keaton. Senator Keaton. Nah, you sure as hell don't represent me. Any particular reason why you insist on getting on my bad side? You're on my future father-in-law's bad side, he said, unflinching. I had to hand it to him. He had balls the size of cantaloupes. And the race to Francesca's heart is one I'm going to beat you at. I very much doubt you're capable of beating me to anything other than pre-ejaculation, kid. I'm fully prepared to test that theory. Heads up, I told Francesca I would gladly marry her without dowry, and that I am more than happy for my family to shell out whatever money is needed to untangle her from her Keaton situation. Might want to find another bride to fit that dress you bought. I was about to punch him in the middle of my engagement party when my fiancé slipped out of the second floor too. She looked like a barely contained mess. Her smeared makeup was carefully wiped from her face. Her eyes were wild with realization. Paired with Bandini's frank admission that he'd slept with her, I saw very clearly what everyone else at the party were about to see too. Yet again, Francesca Rossi had been fucked by a man who was not her fiancé. At her own engagement party. Minutes after she was on my arm, no less. I pushed Angelo down the stairs, pulling my future wife by the arm. She shrieked when I touched her, her eyes darting up in hysteria before softening when she saw it was me. Then she saw what was written on my face. If she could read me, which she could by now, she knew she was in deep trouble. What do you want? She seethed. A loyal fiancé. A fucking shotgun. For this nightmare of a sham relationship to be over. You just broke our verbal contract, Nemesis. Not a good thing to do with a lawyer. She frowned, but didn't try to defend herself. There was a guillotine inside me, and I wanted to snap her pretty head off her body. Tonight.
Francesca. I just wiped the tears from my eyes after telling my mother that I was starting to warm up to my husband. The revelation was bittersweet, if not completely crushing. Perhaps it was the nightly encounters in the vegetable garden, or the way he kissed me so openly in front of Miss Sterling tonight when he picked me up. Is it Stockholm Syndrome, Mama? I think it's just young love, Vita Mia. Love is, after all, a little mad. Otherwise, it is not love, but merely infatuation. Do you have to be mad to fall in love? Of course you do. Falling in love is, by definition, going crazy for someone else. Are you crazy about Dad? I'm afraid I am. Otherwise, I wouldn't stay, even though he is cheating on me. That happened, too, and it threw me off, even though I should have seen it coming. It was not uncommon for the men of the outfit to take a mistress or two. Mom said that if it rips you apart, that means it is real. But shouldn't love feel good? Oh, nothing is good if it doesn't have the power to feel bad, too. It's all about the quantities, Francesca. Quantities. The quantity of my affection toward Wolf revealed itself when Angelo ushered me to the garden, away from the throng of people. despite my feeling completely crushed and angry at my cold-hearted fiancé, I'd wanted to stay with him and brave my father together. Then Angelo sat me down and brushed a dark curl from my eyes and asked me if I was happy. I thought about it long and hard. I wasn't happy. I was not unhappy either. I'd realized that not only did I harbor unexplainable positive feelings for the man who'd imprisoned me, but I no longer craved Angelo's touch the way I had before Wolf bulldozed his way into my life. I still loved Angelo, but only as the kid who protected me from his brothers and shared smiles with me from across the dining table. Instead of his warm, familiar, soft hands, I longed for my fiancé's strong, callous, hard palms. The realization struck me like lightning, and I told Angelo that, although I felt bad about him and Emily, it was over between us. For good. Once I saw the look on his face, I took his hand and brought it to my chest, begging for his forgiveness. And when he stood up and walked away, all I wanted to do was find my mother and tell her. I had to wait until Angelo was nowhere near me so it wouldn't look like we were going to the same place. Angelo had disappeared inside the house shortly after. My cousin Andrea said, between sipping mimosas, that she saw him slipping into a guest room upstairs with the blonde reporter Wolf used to date. The one with the pretty hair? Tall, lanky, tan? I didn't need a reminder to the fact that Kristen was gorgeous. Right. Thanks. Instead of feeling anger at his behavior, all I felt was strange hostility. Even that wasn't toward Angelo, it was toward my own fiancé, who had humiliated me in front of my parents when my father threw a jab at him. Now we were in the car, staring outside our windows as we always did, watching Chicago whooshing by in its majestic, grayer-than-wolf's eyes glory. I fiddled with the edges of my white dress, unsure what to say or do. Again, Wolf arrived at the silly conclusion that I'd slept with Angelo. And again, I felt that defending myself was encouraging a pattern where I always had to make excuses for talking to a friend. Did he really think so little of me? We had a verbal contract, and since striking it, time had passed. Time in which I kissed him and caressed him and opened my thighs for him to stroke me there through my clothes. I stroked him, too. Did that mean nothing to him? Did he really think I could do that with any man at any time?
I will not marry a whore,
Wolf said with dry resolute, still staring out the window. In the rearview mirror, I could see Smithy, his driver, cringing behind the wheel and shaking his head. I closed my eyes, willing myself not to cry. Let me go, then.
Am I hearing an admission, Miss Rossi?
I will not defend myself in front of a man who does not deserve my pleas, I said as calmly as I could.
Is he worth my wrath?
You don't scare me, Senator Keaton, I lied, ignoring the tears clogging my throat. I liked him. I did. I liked that he defended me in front of my father, and that he offered me the freedom to study and work and leave the house unattended. I liked that he was at war with my family, but didn't put me in the middle of it. I even liked that he didn't want me to be his baby machine. Liked that he was agreeable whenever I decided to play nice with him. That the version of Wolf I was going to get, the jerk or the sharp-tongued admirer, solely depended on my behavior toward him. I liked how his body enveloped mine like a shield, how his lips scorched my skin, how his tongue swirled over my needy flesh.
Yet,
he corrected, his jaw as hard as granite.
You're not scared of me. Yet.
You want me to be scared of you?
I want you to behave for once in your miserable bratty life.
I did not sleep with Angelo Bandini, I said for the first time that evening, and I promised myself, also for the last time.
Shut up, Francesca.
My heart coiled in the corner of my chest, and I